I'm sure that as we see people in the church, and especially leaders in the church, we oftentimes wonder why they ever have disagreements. And I expect there are times when we would have an idea that if they were really what they ought to be, there shouldn't be any disagreement among them at all. I wonder if that's really true. And my attention is drawn to that in the book of Acts, in the end of the 15th chapter, and we go on to the 16th chapter. You will remember in our last study, we took note of how Paul and Barnabas came to a point of disagreement. You remember it was over the matter of taking John Mark. Barnabas determined to take with them John, whose surname was Mark, but Paul thought not good to take him with them, who departed from them from Pamphylia and went not with them to the work. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from another. This is at the closing of the chapter 15 in the book of Acts. And I know that a good many people have taken the general idea that that was a quarrel that shouldn't have occurred. I want to raise some question in your mind about that. In the first place, was it a quarrel? I'm not sure it was a quarrel. It was a difference of opinion. There's a big difference in that. One man says, I think we should do like this. The other man says, well, I don't. I think we should do like this. And they begin to urge their thoughts to each other, I do not doubt. And we read here that the contention was so sharp between them, the difference in their views was so sharp, that they departed asunder one from the other. And again I raise the question, do we need to think this was a mistake? What actually resulted from this separation? What actually resulted was there were two missionary companies instead of one. There were two missionary campaigns instead of one. No, I wouldn't be so quick to say there was a right or a wrong about this. When we study this incident, we can't help, and we've already taken note of it when we were studying Barnabas, we can't help but feel that Barnabas showed what a wonderful man he was in that he gave Mark a second chance, as it were, that he actually, sympathetically, was willing to do something for Mark. Now, when you think about Paul, you'll say, well, Paul was terrible. He wouldn't do that. Wait a minute. What was Paul going to do? Paul was the great evangelist, the great apostle, and he was going out into absolutely new territory. He was going to head inward into the mainland of Asia Minor, and it would be difficult to say what he would encounter. And if you check through what happened to him in the second missionary journey and compared to what happened to him in the first missionary journey, you will know that he came into much more difficult situations in the second missionary journey than he had even in the first one. And it's quite possible that Paul would have reasoned with himself that if Mark couldn't go with them in the one, he wouldn't be ready to go with them in the other. But we do not need to. I am not interested in specially justifying the one over against the other. Personally, I have this feeling about it. I think Barnabas was absolutely sincere, and I think Paul was absolutely sincere. There was no difference between these two men in the way they felt about the Lord. No difference in their personal relationship with him. The difference was in the matter of their personal procedure. One wanted to go north, the other wanted to go east. Well, they kept talking and talking about this thing. When the man wanted to go north, wanted to go north. The man that wanted to go west, wanted to go west. That's all there was to it. And the more they talked about it, didn't get any closer together, so what did they do? Instead of prolonging this thing, instead of going on to the point where they would have a permanent hurt with each other and so on, they separated. That's what I think has happened. And I do know this, in connection with that separation, that you'll read about Paul. We read in the end of chapter 15, Paul chose Silas and departed, being recommended by the brethren to the grace of God. Don't forget that. So the contention was sharp, yes. The difference of opinion was real, yes. The disagreement was so strong that they separated and went separate ways. But when they went, the church as a whole commended them to the grace of God. They didn't carry over any argument into their separation at that point. And so we come in chapter 16 to the what happened immediately following. And we find that Paul called a young man called Timothy. He prevailed upon Timothy to join him. This is in chapter 16, in the first three verses. And as you go into it, you can feel how Paul's initiative is involved. He reached out. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and took and circumcised him because of the Jews which were in those quarters. In other words, here was a young man who was the son of a godly, believing mother, well reported of by the brethren, who had a good record. And in your own mind, you can contrast that with Mark. Mark did not have a good record. Mark had turned back when he was halfway through the campaign in that earlier campaign of theirs. But this young man was well spoken of by the brethren, and Paul wanted him to come along with him. And he took and circumcised him because of the Jews which were in those quarters. Somehow or other, I have the feeling you can't pay too much attention to this. I mean by that, it's very, very important. It's an illuminating thing. Now listen, circumcision was not necessary for spiritual experience. Paul knew that very well. You would not have to be circumcised in order to have fellowship with God. You read the second chapter, the end of the second chapter of the book of Romans, or you read the book of Galatians, it's just as clear as language can make it, that circumcision was not necessary. But circumcision was expedient here. It was something with a doing of which would relieve the apostolic company, Paul and his friends, from the criticism and opposition of the Jews, who would be offended if Timothy went into spiritual exercises and religious work and had not been properly, as it were, introduced to the relationship with God according to Jewish custom. Now, when you and I are living today, I wonder if you can see how that would apply with us today. There will be some things around the church that the people in the church insist upon. They're not absolutely necessary. You wouldn't have to do them to be saved. But doing them would keep you from being criticized by other people, and it would give other people a sense of your willingness to cooperate, that kind of thing. I must confess that I have a little feeling like that about wearing a gown to preach. It was not easy for me to do it. I didn't grow up with the idea of ever wearing anything that looked like a dress, and I had no intention of doing it. But as I grew on in my Christian experience, I found out that if it would take that to please some people, I could put one on. Would I wear a gown everywhere? No. Would I wear a gown always? No. Would I wear a gown sometimes? Yes. And when would I wear it? When it would please some people. Wouldn't do anybody any harm, and it would please some people. It would make them feel that there was something fitting about it. The same thing is true with reference to those of us who are in schoolwork, and we think of our academic parades, our academic processions. When you see these graduates of universities and colleges and seminaries dressed out with a gown and with a mortarboard, you know, that square thing they wear on their head, it can be of no earthly use that I can think of. It doesn't look like a hat, it doesn't feel like a hat, and it just looks silly. The little children look at you and laugh at you. But, you know, it has a tradition. It means something. And I would expect for the average college graduate, there'd be something as if you were not really graduated if you hadn't walked in the procession wearing a gown and wearing that mortarboard on your head. And then we who are graduates, we have those hoods, you know, those affairs that hang over our shoulders, around our neck, with all the different colors that are in there and the like of that. We call that academic costume. Sometimes we call it regalia, and that's just what it is. And when we have that on, we march in procession. I always feel like I'm something in a circus parade. That's really what it feels like to me personally. But I don't want you to misunderstand me. I don't want you to think I'm belittling it. I know that for some people this is very important. And actually, when I get in it, I don't mind it myself. It's something like a uniform in the army. I remember one time I was for a length of time associated as a volunteer member of the British Grenadiers an outfit that was stationed in Winnipeg, Canada. And I remember they wore bright red tunics. Well, I never wore a bright red coat in my life. But I put on a bright red tunic with brass buttons. I'll tell you right now, it was something you could see 3 miles away. And I would have been ordinarily just as awkward with that. I would have been embarrassed to wear it. But I put on a uniform, and in that it took that to walk in with the British Grenadiers, and I enjoyed being in with that group of people. And so you take various uniforms of various kinds. They have some aspects about them that are arbitrary. There's no reason in the whole wide world you can figure out that I can see why those sailors should have those bell-bottom pants. I can't figure that out. But that's what they wear, and you got to wear that if you're going. Used to be that you had to wear that to be a sailor, so you wear it. What I'm trying to say to you is this. There can be things around the church. I don't mind you saying even that they're human. After all, I'm human, and I expect you're human. So we human beings have human things. They are innocent enough. They don't need to mean anything terribly badly. Listen. If anybody thought that's what it would take for salvation, that'd make it bad. And if Paul had thought that anybody dreamed that circumcision was necessary to being saved, I'm sure he wouldn't have done it here. Because later on in the book of Acts, we're going to find out when the people insisted that he circumcise a Greek by the name of Titus, he wouldn't do it. Because that was going to make circumcision mean something for salvation. No, it doesn't. It isn't a question of being saved whether you wear a gown in the pulpit. It's just a question whether you're appropriate and whether you're going to be acceptable to the people who are listening to you. And Paul wanted Timothy to be acceptable. And he wanted him to be acceptable to those people so he could preach to them. So he just did it this way. And he took him and had him circumcised because of the Jews which were in those quarters. And you would say then should one do this kind of thing and just please people? Yes. Paul respected local sensibilities. And that's a very important thing for a Christian witness to do. We don't advance the gospel in any way at all by making people mad. We could actually conduct ourselves humbly in a way that would pay some deference to people's feelings. And if they want us to dress like this and act like that, we can do it. It won't hurt. Our God and Heavenly Father, give us grace in our hearts and strength in our faith. To humbly and quietly walk with thee at all times. For thy name's sake we ask it. Amen.